listening to Parent Projects.
Hey, welcome this week, everybody, to our special guest, Otto Schill III. He's a partner with Jennings, Strauss & Salmon here in the Phoenix metro area. And he is joining us for part two in this three-part series where we're covering emotional legal decisions. In particular, we're going to focus today on healthcare side of the house. In our first series, we broke down kind of leading into these types of discussions and what that felt, what that really feels like. Mr. Schill, he's practiced for nearly 40 years in law. He's a certified tax specialist. He focuses on the practice of tax, businesses, estate planning, government audits, investigations, employee benefits, government contracting. But I think what's most pertinent against this particularly is that he's had a parent project and a complex parent project where he had to handle that from the perspective of also being an attorney with this background and understanding of estate planning. I think it's going to be a dynamic and great conversation today. Join me with Otto Schill of Jennings, Strauss, and Salmon.
Listening to Parent Projects, a family media and technology group production. Now here's your host, Tony Siebers.
So it's a three-part series, and really it's because there's a lot to work through. The emotional legal decisions that are involved when you step into a parent project are likely to be something that trips you and your family up right away. It oftentimes seems like it's an issue of black and white and what it looks like. But today, Otto's going to explain why that's not the case and what your actual responsibility is, as well as ethically and where your heart needs to land against this. So I'm going to welcome Otto Schill back in to the show today. Hey, Otto, thanks for joining us again today.
Hi, Tony. Thanks for having me.
So in the first part of this, we walked through you and I, we've known each other for some time. We've had great conversations over the years about our parent projects and even my projects with my sister just recently in the last year. And so processing those things, end of life, watching that slide. You describe, at one time I remember you describing a kind of a slide. It starts maybe at a 10, from 10 down to zero and where that goes and how that comes through. But that dynamic, can you kind of expand against that? What is that dynamic? And I think we'll probably use that to describe maybe where we are today a little bit.
Well, I think what we were talking about is that most people are able to deal with a crisis moment. You know, there's a sudden car accident, somebody's incapacitated, or some other kind of catastrophic event. But not as many people are ready for a long decline that happens with most people as they get older. You know, yeah. I woke up one morning and my foot started hurting. I can't tell you why, but it's certainly a hindrance some days, right? And we all kind of experience those things as we get a little older. And so, you know, my experience, and I think yours is, you go along at a fairly high functional level, and then something happens, and now you're at a little lower functional level, and that happens several times, and then one day, time to move on.
Yeah. Well, and some people refer to the frog in the pot kind of idea for how that can happen. Easy when it's that fast, hot water, you're going to jump into it. The frog jumps right back out. But the frog that sits in that cold water that slowly gets heated up the other way will sit there until the end. It's hard to recognize that that problem setting on you, or maybe the immediacy of what you're doing.
Yeah. Well, I think our discussion centered around the difference in decision-making in those two circumstances, because it's very different.
That is, okay, so like that's... Well, let's jump in towards that. Let's unpack a bit. You're an attorney, right? We come see attorneys to give us kind of the written rule. I think one thing you'll often see, especially if you've got a sibling who's emotionally struggling as well to catch in where this is, this seems really simple, right? You have a piece of paper in front of you and it's black and white and that's where it is. What do we need to know? I mean, legally and ethically, what What are we really doing if we're somebody who's responsible for somebody else and we've got one of these pieces of paper and we're responsible for using it?
Well, first of all, there's a balance to be had. On the one hand, the piece of paper, the healthcare power of attorney and the living will reflect what the person you're caring for thought about and decided. And so it's important, you're an agent, you're not acting on your own, and it's important to respect what that person wanted and expressed on the paper. On the other hand, sometimes the paper doesn't go far enough in describing the decision-making process. It may give you a lot of latitude to decide, but then you're left with what to do in an emergent situation. How hard do you try? How far do you go? And so trying to figure out how to respect the person's wishes and at the same time interpret those wishes in the context of what's happening for them now. How are they participating in life now? What's their experience? Because at the end of the day, as a caregiver, our job was to help the person we're helping have the most meaningful life experience possible, not to prolong death, or prolong life or ward off death or terminate life early. That's really not our purview. It's about how do you help the person have the most meaningful, positive experience they can have in the circumstances.
And I think that is a key takeaway. If you're a caretaker that's going to step up and work to this, having that first understanding of that, I think will make it much easier for you in the preparation and particularly to prepare your mind for some of the decisions and the gravity of the decisions you're going to have to make. That's a great kind of guiding light. I think that what it helps you maybe do is I talk to my kids. I've got a son who's learning to drive, and he'll often stare right at the hood of the car. right at the front emblem of it, right? And he's going to kill me when he sees this, right? but you got to get him to look down the road and understanding where that is, getting his eyes fixed to the horizon. And then all of a sudden he's like, oh, well, this is easy. This is a lot easier than when you're just staring down here. A similar thing, if you can understand that horizon as having that positive and that meaningful life experience, I think we find it's a lot easier to stay on the street. Our peripheral vision will help us do a lot of that.
Well, all of us have heard different adages about the importance of serving other people and putting their needs before our needs.
Yeah.
And I think that really applies here. In my law practice, I've seen all sorts of family situations. There's family situations where a parent isn't necessarily terminal, but a child wants them to move along so money can pass, right? I mean, some people are motivated by that. Some people don't understand, and the document says don't do thing one, but in the context of the person's life at the time, thing one still makes sense.
Sure.
And you have to make that judgment, and you're balancing the wishes written on the page with what's really going on the ground.
And so these are critical reasons out there that you probably, if you're not sure how to unpack and get into this, don't worry, stand by, because this next series, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about, I don't know, are going to break down preparation for this. And in doing that, how to understand those documents, how to understand what's going to happen, to prepare yourself for that, what you can tell your parents so that you're that enabler for them in the front end and hopefully get some of that set up. Because as we talked about in episode one, early and often, right? You want to get involved in this as early as possible and start tackling some of this stuff. So before we jump right into the weeds of that, we just want to give a shout out. We're in the Phoenix, Arizona market. On March the 1st, the All Things Senior event out with the city of Scottsdale. We are happy to sponsor that and are going to be out there all day. And we just want to bring a little bit more detail to that day to you and our audience.
Are you looking for more information about healthcare, senior housing, municipal services, recreation, technology, transport, or entertainment for your adult children? Then welcome to the All Things Senior Expo. The All Things Senior Expo is held at the Scottsdale Center of Performing Arts in Scottsdale, Arizona. Vendors will come and showcase their products, services, or programs to attendees. This event is sponsored by Parent Projects, CoClear, and Love and Life After 50. If you are a vendor and would like to talk about your products, Parent Projects will be there live and conducting interviews. If you wish to schedule an interview with Parent Projects Live at the All Things Senior Expo, please go to parentprojects.com/allthingssenior to find out more and schedule your interview. We look forward to seeing you there. Behold and beheld.
And we look forward to breaking down some of these topics here today of how you prepare for having a conversation, those highly and those emotional legal decisions with your parents, particularly around healthcare. We've got Otto Schill from Jennings, Strauss, and Salmon here in the Phoenix market. He's an attorney and he's an experienced parent project survivor, if you will. He's worked his way through one of these projects. He works with other families going through them. I think, the perspective you add, Otto, has so much to offer. I really appreciate you coming in today to share this with us.
You bet.
So let's get down to the meat of this. At the back end, what I expect we're going to come through and talk are going to be five major things that we can do to prepare for the decline. As that decline comes down, particularly in making, to prepare ourselves to make some highly emotional legal decisions that have to do with healthcare. We're going to set aside for the moment, those of you in the audience, if you've got those questions that are ringing in your head when it comes down to the wills and the trusts and the finance side of the house, it's going to be in part three of the series. Don't worry about it. No, you haven't seen it yet. It's coming down the pipeline. But today, kind of pinging off those top five things, Otto, one of the first things that really sticks with me that you brought out up front and early and often is mom and dad need to have these documents. What are the key documents? What are those documents that I need to, when I finally realize I got to step in, I'm looking to grab a hold of and make sure I ask them where they are or ensure that we're driving through it?
Well, in Arizona, I'll speak to Arizona because I'm licensed there. Other states may vary, although most are similar. You would typically want to have a healthcare power of attorney, which empowers your agent to do a whole list of things on your behalf if you are unable to do them. In Arizona, it typically makes decisions about mental health care and what things you will and won't permit without a court order. It talks about some burial issues, some treatment issues. Second, you'd want to have a living will, which is sort of the pull the plug, don't pull the plug document. Here are the things I definitely do or don't want in which circumstances. And finally, in Arizona, at least, you might have an orange card, which is some sort of do not resuscitate order if that's what you want. So those.
And is that also the advance directive? Is that where those things come into play, right? For some of those states that have advance directives, right?
For those of you in Arizona, that looks like the big orange card you put on the refrigerator that you get from the fire department.
Great. Okay. So we should be seeing that. That is an awesome thing to be looking for when you come in or to know where that is.
What the fire department will be looking for.
Well, that's what I was going to say, right? Your fire department's going to look for it. When they're walking in, they're taking a look. And it's not just them. In my experience as a police officer, you're looking for that information and that documentation as well. Again, different states, it looks a little bit different, but I love that it's orange here in Arizona. That's fantastic.
Documents the hospital's going to be looking for, if you have to go there, they're typically going to scan them in, put them on their system, because that's frankly, from a liability perspective, it takes them off the hook and allows them to talk to you with privacy being such an important issue these days. It's pretty tough to navigate talking to the right people and getting the right information if you don't have that documentation in place.
Without a doubt. And if you're looking for more information and those particular types of documents here in Arizona, generally what they are from a big picture and getting educated about that, you can check out the show notes down below for this particular episode. And then, take that at a minimum, there's going to be a list down there for you. I take that list down to the attorney that's working with your family. And in auto, that's going to be likely, this will be a family law, an estate law, or elder law. What type of attorney is it that's going to help a family with something like that?
Well, really, one of two types. Either you're going to talk to someone who's an estate planner who is used to helping families prepare wills, trust. There may be tax planning involved. There may not be. Or you might be dealing with somebody who practices in Altex planning or Medicaid planning, which is someone who has fewer assets and might be looking to Medicaid to pay for long-term care over right. some time, and how to preserve family assets and not dissipate them altogether.
Great. And there's other resources, healthcare advocacy organizations, especially certified healthcare advocates. We've got a pool of them available to it. Parent projects that offer advice and talk through. Those would be some other great places to start understanding, so you can guide your parents to start looking for those docs.
Tony, one thing I'd emphasize there is, again, we've talked about sooner than later. And I think figuring out who is going to be responsible is pretty important early on. People have different perspectives. So I've spoken to several national doctors' conferences about these issues and about my experience in my circumstance. And you find there are some advocates who are out there who want to prevent children from forcing an outcome a parent didn't want. And you find children who want to stay within the four corners of the document. And you've got the person who's boots on the ground taking care of things who may not be motivated by any self-interest, but rather motivated by what's the best thing for mom. And it could conflict with those other two things. So sure. conversations, if there's a way to have them about what makes sense under certain circumstances and who's going to make the decisions and how should be guided. Those are important conversations if you can manage to have them as a family, and even more important to reflect a process in the documents we've talked about that empowers that person to involve the right medical professionals and others to develop a plan of care so that you're not left with a categorical decision. Well, do I do this or don't do this?
Yeah,
you're informed by the plan of care as you go along.
So the number two part into this is ensuring that those documents are current and are matching the circumstances. Divorces and remarriages and all kinds of other things tend to happen, and aging happens. And your parents should obviously be taking into account what their current circumstances are, or if they've got newfound diagnoses or other things coming. You used one specific term, and I think it relates back to the last comment you made. You talked, especially in a healthcare power of attorney, being an agent. The agent, and can you explain the role of what generally is the role of the agent, and why is that an important term to understand and know?
So an agent acts for another person on another person's behalf when that person cannot do it for themselves. Your job is not to decide what you want. Your job is to facilitate what the principal wants, or the person who gave you the right to act on their behalf. And that's what the documents typically reflect.
Yeah. And those, as there's updating for circumstances and things, this would be, I think this is an important time to make sure that it's also reflecting that whomever the agent is, that's the right agent for those most current circumstances that come through. Now, you may have a power of attorney or something was written at one point in time with a particular, maybe a sibling that was the oldest. So that's where it was expected. That's where things sat. But then over time, the oldest turned out to not be able to handle maybe one of these types of things, or they had other complications in life that were going to make it difficult for them to serve in that role. These would be great things to start looking for in early conversations.
A good agent for these kinds of decisions is someone who can act without self-interest, someone who can analyze the situation, because sometimes it gets pretty complex. And go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, do you see where the agent is not a family member, even though there may be family members there?
It could be. I've seen that happen, and I've seen that cause a fair amount of strife, because now somebody else is making a decision and daughter's left out, and that's a problem.
Yeah. I think where we've heard people most often comment or have questions, or not questions, but concerns that we see people working through, is when a remarriage maybe has happened with a family member. And that's new. That's a newer relationship still, or a newer marriage at that point in time. And those decisions are what's driving everything. Whereas the kids are, you know, they're trying to hang on and trying to figure out, because the conversations didn't happen, just a level set. So,
well, I can tell you, in our circumstance, I responded to many emergent events, and there was not time to call people or get consensus. There was a decision to be made, and I had to make it. End of story.
Sure.
Yeah, on the other hand, if there was an opportunity, I would always involve my siblings and let them know what was going on, and let them have a chance to comment on it. Because it helped relationships.
Absolutely. And that is, you're going to need to rely on those, I think, as you get into some of these difficult conversations. Okay, so we've got mom and dad making sure they have those documents in the first place. We know what we're looking for up there. We know generally what they do. Number two, they've been updated for the situation. We're keeping them current. We understand who's on point, who's the agent, and how that's working. Now let's talk through what is, I'm trying to look off if I had, introducing, that's what it was, introducing the parties. Meeting mom and dad's doctors, is that a thing? Like, can they set that up ahead of time? Is that something to think through once you've got these docs in place?
It's certainly something I would consider. So you talk about the documents changing over time, and I'm not sure the documents themselves always have to change. What I've started to do in the documents I draft that is different than what I did before I had the caregiving experience is that I'm drafting in the concept of the agent should consult with the treating physician and develop a plan of care that changes. Because the decision-making process is different depending on what health circumstance you're dealing with. So if the document empowers a process that allows for change, allows for careful consultation, then you're not left in an awkward position when you have to make a decision on the spot, because it's life or death. You know where you're going. You know whether to resuscitate or not. I'll give you an example. If you have a document that says don't do CPR, well, sometimes that can be a real judgment, because you can have an accident and need CPR, and if they do CPR, it'll save your life, and perhaps the quality of your life isn't that bad, and you probably in the moment would want that. Having said that, if somebody does that to you and they're really good at it, they're going to break all of your ribs, and it's a pretty rough scenario. So your decision's going to be influenced by how old someone is, how frail someone is, how they're doing. And in that context of making that kind of hard decision, you're going to be better off if you've developed a standard, a plan of care against which you're measuring your decisions, right?
Meaningful life experience.
Meaningful life. Yeah. In my estimation, it's not in my purview to make a decision based on whether I believe somebody's quality of life is good or bad.
Right.
I don't think I have permission to do that. I think from a moral standpoint, it would be wrong to decide on that basis. But if you're evaluating based a plan of care before you get into a circumstance, you know, we've all heard stories of doctors saying there's nothing more we can do. That really is never true. They can always do something more. The question is, should they? The question is, does it help? Does the antibiotic cure the infection, or does it just keep any infection out of the bloodstream. Okay. Does a new surgical procedure give you a better outcome? Does it, you know, or does it cripple you?
Yeah.
So there are things, always technical things that can be done that simply don't make sense in the circumstances. And so to be guided by a plan of care that you develop when you're not in the situation helps you make decisions later on.
Well, and just imagine to the point then of the point number three in making those introductions, the benefit that having a rapport would do to that situation. Because look, that slide from 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 5, 5, 5, you know, as they're working through there, you end up getting to an incapacitation where you take charge. That could last for a prolonged period of time. And there's change and fluctuation within that long period of time. I think about, you know, your situation, your process, good amount of time. Dementia can be one in particular. If that's something you're facing, there can be a good amount of time once you step in and you're acting in your agent capacity where the situation changes, that the applicability of the thought of when they created the document in the plan, the care plan at that time, just look wildly different than what it does in their frail nature here or after they've forgotten to eat for, you know, the last week and a half or whatever that might be. So, yeah.
Well, I'm not saying you ignore the document. I'm just saying if the document is flexible and allows you to adapt to the circumstance, you're a lot more comfortable as a decision maker.
And again, this is the purpose of this show. What we're trying to talk with you guys about is, these are things you can get in front of that can make things a little bit easier. The reality is we were talking about this before we came on the show. I don't think I've ever had someone in a family we've talked to, of all the families I've talked to from this, that said that what they prepared for was the thing that really that they had to face and that was difficult to work through. It's always something different. So you can only prepare so much, which go ahead.
No, I was just going to say the other important part of that kind of discussion ahead of time is that you can either get a commitment from or from the physician to participate in that process, or maybe they're not comfortable. And I'd rather know that ahead of time than, in our case, we were managing a ventilator at home, and there was a long-standing relationship with a physician who I personally knew well. But that physician wasn't comfortable managing a ventilator. So all of a sudden, one day I'm standing on the sidewalk going, well, okay, now what am I going to do? Because they weren't comfortable.
Right. Right. And I think that's a great preparation side. There's one other preparation. I don't know if it's a mental, it's an emotional, it's probably a combination of a lot of those things. But at one point in time, you and I had a conversation and you made a really great clear statement of you have to be okay with the outcome being death in a decision that you make, that you're going to make a decision. You've got to, in the front end of this, the earlier you can prepare yourself and take that pressure that, yeah, I'm going to make these decisions the best we can. I'm going to make them to provide a meaningful life experience. And if something happens and they pass away, you're going to be able to do that. I think that sounds like that's a pretty important marker for somebody who thinks that they need to serve or would serve as an agent. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. I, you know, for the 2 months after my mother died, I went around thinking, well, I could have done this better, could have done that better, wish I'd have thought of that, I should have done this.
Yeah.
I mean, it was difficult, and I had arrived early on at two conclusions. One, I was in a position where I had to make decisions that I wasn't necessarily technically qualified to make from a medical standpoint. So I had to learn how to get information from people who were and not surrender my judgment to them.
Sure.
Because I had to be able to
make act decision. On behalf of the bigger picture, on behalf of your mom. Yeah.
And secondly, I had to be all right with the fact that one day, if it didn't come out right, it was because I couldn't do it. I had a limited set of things I could do to address an emergent circumstance. And if those things didn't work, you know, we got to a point where going to the hospital was counterproductive. The negative physical and emotional impact of my mom being in the hospital, even for a few days, was far worse than the experience she would have if we managed it at home and let whatever happened happen.
Yeah.
It was just too diminishing to go to the hospital, even though technically they could do far more than I could do.
Yeah. Yeah. And those are just part of those conversations to think through when you're establishing who that agent's going to be, circling back into that, right? Have that honesty with yourself. If somebody in the family's got that experience, they can, you know, reach out to them, somebody that knows you, and friends, have people provide that perspective, take in that perspective. Don't be afraid to talk through it. The fifth thing that I think that leads to is not only being, having that understanding for yourself, but being forgiving for a sibling, being, empathetic, understanding that we all come from different places on this, and there's different reasons and how we tackle that. Is there anything you can think of some great guidance against, families trying to deal with maybe that complicated sibling that is, well, it's going to be black and white, and this is all it's going to be, and has a difficult time changing gears with you or moving as a, you know, as an agent when you're trying to work through that system?
Well, I mean, every family's different, and relationships are different, and you've got to figure out a way to communicate. I found in my situation, the best thing I could do was to explain my experience and explain my decision-making process so that people understood that I wasn't trying to achieve any goal of mine. I wasn't trying to keep somebody alive indefinitely, and I wasn't mechanically committed to a piece of paper either. Although, in our situation, had somebody wanted to do CPR, I probably would have rejected that, because the trauma associated with it would not have been worth whatever benefit we might have achieved. And I think I've got a good friend who's a physician and who speaks a lot on end of life topics, and I think she would tell you the same thing, that physicians can do lots of things, and at some point they shouldn't do most of those things, if any.
As we kind of wrap up those five, preparation points in there, the order at which things are done, understanding how those things are coming at you, connecting yourself to those people, it's a complicated walkthrough. It is going to be difficult. I think that empathy with yourself, that empathy with the other family members as they're trying to walk their way through it, communication, you probably can't hear it enough that it's going to be an important part of getting through. So,
the other thing I would highlight is, as caregivers, we are not empowered to extend life or prolong life. That's not our job. It's not, I mean, some people would have a hard time with that. And if you struggle with that, maybe you don't want to.
Not you. Yeah. 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 You know, to the same degree, when we talk with people about being fiduciaries or stepping in from that role, if you've got three bankruptcies, you're probably not the best person to step up to serve as a fiduciary for someone. It doesn't make you a bad person. It just wouldn't make you the best person for that particular thing. So,
well, the reality is death is a natural part of life, and it's okay that somebody passes.
Yeah.
The key is to help that person have a meaningful life experience while life endures. And none of us knows quite how to approach it. Even in the rooms of hundreds of doctors I've spoken to, relatively few of them had ever experienced being in the room when somebody died. They didn't know what that was like. So there are not that many people who can talk to you about what it looks like and what you do when it's time.
Well, that is one thing, obviously, we look to rectify here at Parent Projects and what we do. So when we come back from this last little break here, we're going to sum up those points on those five preparation points and just kind of run home with those key things and those takeaways you should have with Otto Schill, Jennings, Strauss, and Salmon, where we're talking about emotional legal decisions. And we are bringing it home today. We've got Otto Schill III from Jennings, Strauss & Salmon in the Phoenix market. He is a tax specialist. He's an attorney. Tax is kind of his gig. He gets the estate law. He is really, I think, one of the best touch points we've gotten off of this is a professional who sees so many families come through this from that professional standpoint, but then has that personal parent project aspect as a family caregiver. To know where the rubber meets the road. And Otto, you've done a fantastic job today of helping us, man, circle around some insanely difficult things in those when those legal decisions start touching down on the healthcare side, which, your lead off, I guess we talk about what we're going to tell you. We go through that, and we're going to tell you what we told you. That lead off of focusing that you are here to provide a meaningful life experience to get your eyes down road instead of thinking that you're here to determine maybe the time and the hour in which it happens or you know whatever other things might pop into your mind that you think you have to manage. The reality is within this moment, having that focus seems to play a huge role in understanding how to prep, but to know whether or not you're the right person. Do we agree?
Mm-hmm. We do.
Okay. Awesome. The top five, I'm going to recap off of those. The first one we came back through, we talked to that, in preparation for this to happen, it is one, know what these documents are, understand the shuffle of these documents, knowing what mom and dad need to do and ensure that mom and dad have these documents. You can reach out, parentprojects.com can help you get familiar with those documents, that checklist that will be down below in the show notes here. We also have some resources. I know we've got a top documents you need before you die, handout and a checklist that goes out to people. But everything from that living will, that healthcare power of attorney, the orange card, so sometimes referred to as advanced directive that might go up on that refrigerator. These are key things that you're going to look for when they come in. Is there anything that we missed on that, Otto, we should have taken?
Nope, I think that's it.
Rockin'. That critical piece. Transitioning off of that is an agent's got to be selected in those. You want to ensure that that agent is having probably this next conversation, and that's making sure that those documents are aligned to what the current situation is. Ensuring that if there's been a change, there's been a new marriage, there's been a new healthcare condition that's popped up, maybe now you're starting to deal with a cancer or something to that degree, those changes mean something. So taking the time to break those down with at least the agent, but ideally you're going to break those down. Otto, you said also break those down with the other family members and with the doctors and the medical providers. Yes.
Well, Tony, as we've talked about, it's mom and dad's decision first and foremost, and taking away autonomy is probably not going to be well received. So every family has to negotiate it, but the more positive communication about the issues, the less contention later on. So in general, yeah. I find.
Well, and again, circling back through that, reminding your parents, to speak to them about what your concerns are going to be, what you're concerned, the situation you might be in. You could throw out a question. Well, you know, if this happened, I'm concerned about this happening. How would you want me to handle that? I'm concerned that it says not to resuscitate you or to utilize a CPR or something like that. Well, what happens if you fall in the shower and you get positionally asphyxiated, right? You just, because you're leaning down on the side off of that side and you just need a couple of puffs to bring you back and we're there. Like, mom, talk me through something like that. These are real things and having that conversation can help you get through them.
Yeah.
Yeah. The third thing that we drove through was introducing some of those parties. And what you really cued off of that would be a why or something you could do, making that recommendation to your parents, not just of, remember, doctors are probably going to give you about 6 minutes, 6.5 minutes, I think is the average in a round when they're coming through. Typically, we've got some articles we posted earlier this week about how you can help with your parents, especially if they're having a hard time remembering those or building that rapport. This might give you a good opportunity to touch base to see how those things are coming along and where you might be able to assist and where you might be able to help them with working through those situations. But one key part of that takeaway that you talked about that I really liked, Otto, was establishing that rapport so that you can have some nimbleness in the plan and determine whether or not that doctor is going to be able to work with you in the given situations you think you're going to be facing.
Right. I mean, at the end of the day, as we said, you're acting on your parents' behalf. You're not acting for yourself. It's not about what you want. It's about what they want and about what helps them have a positive life experience. And all of those things kind of help approach from that perspective.
Brilliant. Brilliant. And knowing sooner than later if that's going to be a doctor that's going to be able to go to the distance with you or maybe even where that next step they might send you. I think those would be really beneficial things. The fourth thing we talked about was being okay with death. Understanding. I think, Otto, I'm going to let you say, because you said it before about not getting out of here. What is that crux we need to understand with making decisions and when death is potentially there and doing our best?
Well, I think what we talked about was that none of us is empowered to stop death. Death is a natural part of life. And as caregivers, we have to be okay with that. We have to be okay with the fact that one day something we do or don't do isn't going to be good enough. And I will say that taking care of someone else, giving up your time and your energy. I think AARP estimates something like $165 billion a year in uncompensated family caregiving goes on in this country.
Yeah.
You know, in that context, that's a real work of love. It's a joyful thing. And I look back on my time doing it with a lot of joy and could I have done things better? Yes. Did I do a bad job? No. But I look back on the experience with fondness and in the end, it was okay that the end came. That's part of the natural order.
And that is what you're looking to get out of that. So in being okay with that, that you've just seen a great example of that. I know that's what I strive for and will continue to strive for as I deal with, even when I've got to deal with my next parent project off of that as well. That fifth piece that we talked about was being that forgiving and that empathetic nature, not just to yourself, but to your siblings who might be coming from a different place, different life experiences. They're burning their way into it a little differently and leaving some room for some grace when there is some disagreements. And when they take things in. And we talked about some ways that we could reduce that tension by explaining where we are, what we're going after. And then I think you did really well to continue tying that back out. You're here to provide that positive and meaningful life experience when you can recenter everybody back, that being the responsibility. It seems to be something that it's going to benefit a lot of people. I think you just hit a home run by throwing that out there.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Well, Otto, anything, any follow-up, any, as we say in the military side of the house, any alibis or any last second thoughts that you can throw through to think through?
No, I think we've gone over it. Preparation, as in most things, yields benefits years down the road. Most people do not die from catastrophic one-time events. Most people have a longer life experience than that at some point. Some need help, some don't. If someone you love needs help, it's a joyful thing to give it. It's easier if the preparation's better.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate the time and the effort that you took today to help us understand how to do that better and start moving forward so that we have a more smooth parent project in the front end. Again, just as always, I really appreciate you sharing your time, talents, and treasures with us.
Well, thanks for letting me be here.
And we'll see you next.
Bye-bye.
Well, that's it for the team this week, and thanks for joining us. If you've enjoyed the content, remember to subscribe and to share this episode on the app that you're using right now. Your reviews and your comments, they really help us expand our reach as well as our perspective. So if you have time, also drop us a note. Let us know how we're doing. For tips and tools to clarify your parent project, simplify communication with your stakeholders, and verify the professionals that you choose, you can find us on YouTube, follow us on Instagram and Facebook. Thanks again for trusting us. Until our next episode, behold and be held.
Thank you for listening to this Parent Projects podcast production. To access our show notes, resources, or forums, join us on your favorite social media platform or go to parentprojects.com. This show is for entertainment purposes only. Before making any decisions, consult a professional. This show is copyrighted by Family Media and Technology Group Incorporated and Parent Projects LLC. Written permissions must be granted before syndication or rebroadcast.